Jesus told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and planted in his field. Though it is the smallest of all seeds, yet when it grows, it is the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds come and perch in its branches. He told them still another parable. And the kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed with about 30 kilograms of flour until it worked all through the dough. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all he had and bought that field. There again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for fine pearls. When he found one of great value, he went away and sold everything he had, and he bought it. Once again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was let down into the lake and caught all kinds of fish. When it was full, the fishermen pulled it up on the shore. Then they sat down and collected the good fish in baskets, but threw the bad away. This is how it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come and separate the wicked from the righteous and throw them into the blazing furnace, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Have you understood all these things? Jesus asked them. Yes, they replied. He said to them, therefore, every teacher of the law who has become a disciple in the kingdom of heaven is like the owner of a house who brings out of his storeroom new treasure as well as the old.
We just heard in the gospel reading that the kingdom of God is like a mustard seed. On Zoom, can you see that? Probably not. You'd have to really zoom in. In between my fingers is an actual mustard seed. The thing about a mustard seed, I don't know, my family cook a lot of curry. My mum's was born in Uganda, from the Seychelles, and we use mustard a lot in our food. It's also very fragrant and beautiful smelling. So if you would like, anyone who likes fiddling, you can come up and get one mustard seed. And I want to see by the end of the service if you can still have that mustard seed. And there may be a prize of some very, very nice thank yous. And you did amazing. No chocolate. Come on. I'm not buying chocolate for you. So if you want to come up and get one now, you can. Come and get one mustard seed and see if you can make you last my sermon. You only allow one, by the way. Don't take many. I would say if you're prone to eating things, if you have a mustard allergy, please don't eat that. There you go, Thea. There's one. You can only have one. It says the kingdom of God's like a mustard seed. There's a lot of fiddling adults. I knew. It's the musicians as well. So used to fiddling. You didn't like that colour of that one. You want a different one. That one was an odd mustard seed. It did not. Did you not hear the one? Oh, okay, one for Reuben. All right. It's always the teachers who don't know how to follow instructions as well. There you go. You got one. You got one. You can have a few. Yes. I'm not being that mean. So sometimes when we're listening and talking, it's good to have a sense of physical touch. It's good to have a sense of smell. It's good to have something. It's part of, it's why worship in lots of different churches, they have incense and candles and all sorts of different things to help with your senses as we worship. So hopefully this helps you a little bit with my boring talk that's now coming. Those of you who didn't take a mustard seed, now you're thinking, oh, I wish I had one. You were thinking that, weren't you? No, you weren't. Okay. So, just before I go in, there's some really challenging bits to those two readings. And I'm going to tell you where I get a lot of my thought process for before I tell you my thought process. So, there's two books that have really... Three books, the Bible also, sorry. A book by David Bentley Hart called That All Should Be Saved, or Shall Be Saved, and another book by a theologian called Willie James Jennings, which is Acts, his theological unpacking of Acts, which a lot of my thinking in this talk comes from. So if you would like that, you can listen back to the recording, grab those, Google them, look them up. They're easily accessible in terms of buying, or if you want to read my copy, you can have a good chat with me afterwards. I'll stamp it so you can give it back as well. People never give in books. I'm one of those people who doesn't give books back, so I have to do it. So something you might not know about me, you haven't known me for long, is actually I lost my sight when I was a teenager, late teens, and it means that I can't drive. I can see now, as you probably have noticed, or I'm just very good at blagging it. You make it up. But I can't drive. So when I look at this map, I remember all our family holidays and carrying literally everything on my back. When we go away, I'm normally the pack horse. We go camping quite a lot. I have a trolley. The trolley is good to me. And that's how we do family holidays. If we go away, you'll get a nice postcard from me at some point with a picture of Catford. That'll be as far as I'm going this summer. And so when I look at this map and think about the region in Acts, I see the walking. I see the walking, and I see that you really, really want to do something if you're going to walk from Antioch to Jerusalem. Antioch, somewhere in Turkey. Precise bits aren't known, but it's a long way down to get down here. And it takes a long time when you're walking. So, Paul and Barnabas see it as really important that they go back to Jerusalem. Something is happening that's going to shape the future of everything. And they need to go and make sure that the right thing happens. The question is, does inclusion mean assimilation? Do you need to change what you look like, what you feel like, what you do to be part of this new movement? Or can you keep your differences? Literally, can you keep the skin you're in? I'm not going to labor that point. Do you need to change it or remove it? I'm going to say that again. Literally, can you keep the skin you are in, or do you need to change it or remove it? A little bit of a lesson in this part of the church. Sorry, I've just finished theology college. I've got to do a bit of this. This is a religiously pluralistic society. There are lots of different communities interacting with each other. Lots of different peoples. The empire, the Roman Empire, and the empires that have gone before it have meant that people have moved from everywhere. And one of the things that's happening is they see the ancient religion of the Jewish people as really important. They see it as being something special compared to their kind of fly-by-night new Roman things. So a lot of people are really hold, not just the Jewish people, a lot of people in the region hold the Jewish identity as important, and there are converts to Judaism. Some that who haven't taken up the fullness of what it means they go and worship at the temple in Jerusalem, and some who have taken that fullness on, some who have taken circumcision and have taken on the fullness of that Jewish identity as converts. Now, this new sect within Judaism comes up. We call it Christianity now. At the time, it was seen as a new group within Judaism. And that causes some problems. Now, in every community, people need to work out what it means to be in and what it means to be out. And it happens over time, and it happens sometimes by communicating with each other, sometimes just by things kind of slowly building, right? They just happen. How we judge what those things are is generally by looking at the behavior of the people in the community. What does it mean? When I look at how they're acting to each other and to new people. One of the values of Christianity that I kind of hold on to could be this verse from 1 Timothy 2, verse 4. I'll take a little snippet of it, and it says, "All should be saved. But it seems the grace that saves all that Paul has been telling people in Antioch isn't quite enough. There's some rules you need to follow. There's some things you need to do extra." And I bet you, if you're from a marginalized community, you're a woman, or you're someone who's neurospicy, my new term which I've introduced to the church, this idea of neurodiversity, that your brain works slightly differently to other people, that you've been in a situation, or if you're differently abled, that you've been in a situation where you've worked really hard to be included in a group, and then these unwritten rules that you're not part of come up and say, "Ooh, you did really well getting to this point, but now you need to do something else. Oh, and now you need to do something else. Oh, and this one that you didn't know about, that we don't talk about, but is here, you need to do that as well." When I talk to my friends who are autistic, this is one of their biggest fears of entering a space. They think they know the written rules. People have told them what the thing is that you're supposed to do. And when they get there, there's these unwritten things that are just part of that place that no one will tell you about, that really makes you feel uncomfortable because you just don't know what to do. I have that at every family party. Being born here but of parents who come from a different culture means that when I go into a space where my parents are kind of, "This is what you're supposed to do," I'm like, "You didn't teach me these things. I just have to work it out." And then I've done something wrong and my auntie tells me off and then I'm in trouble. There's consequences to not knowing the rules. Didn't see that one coming. Those consequences are built in me. I didn't even know that was coming. I've read this sermon all the time. Tears in my eyes. How is that possible? But that's the true consequence of not knowing the rules in a space, in a community that you want to be included in amazingly, but are just on the outside of. There are barriers that stop entry into a community. And Paul argues amazingly here. I'm not Paul's biggest fan, you'll find out. But Paul argues amazingly here for inclusion, not through assimilation, not by changing who you are, not by acting as someone different, but inclusion as you are in the faith that Jesus came and died for, in that grace. That grace is gracey enough. It does do what it says on the tin. It saves all. Now, I'm going to end with a series of questions, and I'm not going to answer them for you. There's just going to be silence. And then at the end of that time, we'll continue with our service. So answer these in your head. And this is for you as well, young people. Don't think that I gave you the seed just to keep you away from thinking. I gave it to you so you can have something to put your attention into. It's important. Do you need to change who you are to be included in God's grace? Do you need to change who you are? I'm going to change that word grace because sometimes it's a big word. To be included in God's unconditional positive regard, God's love. When you decide to join a community despite the barriers, so when you come into a new space, what do you need to feel safe in that place? In light of the reading from Matthew and that little seed that's in your hand, what does it mean to you to be included in the kingdom of God? What does it mean to you to be included in the kingdom of God? And this last question. What are the barriers for others that you like and want to keep? So what are the barriers for others, for people not like you, that you like and want to keep?